Film Twits. Ding.
This podcast is balanced, as all things should be.
Hello, everybody, and congratulations on finding another episode of Film Twits, where three twits hang out and talk about all things movies. We have Caleb, the resident genius.
Sure, yeah. Hello.
Oh, my phone's
ringing. Welcome
to Film Twits. Oh, great start.
Yeah. This is how all things should be, with us screwing up immediately.
And we have Dave, the local Brit.
Hello.
And me. Today, we are going to be talking about Avengers Endgame.
Spoilers.
Yes. Definitely.
Spoilers across the board.
Yeah, if you've not watched the movie yet, then, well, number one, shame on you.
Yeah.
And number two, you should expect spoilers at this point in your life.
Or if you don't care, then listen away.
It doesn't really matter.
We're happy to have you. Thank you for joining us on this journey.
That's what it's going to be. It's going to be a journey.
I'm excited.
All right, so there is a ton to talk about. So where do we want to start?
I think we should probably start, you know, with our general thoughts.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Overall as a opinion, movie, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Would you like to start, Caleb?
For me? Sure. Yeah. So, oh goodness, excuse me. So, for me, we saw this a couple of weeks ago for the first time, and just my initial thoughts after coming out of it was just how amazing of a wrap-up to 22 movies this thing really was. It encapsulated most, if not all of them, in the span of 3 hours. And, you know, it's something that I have not seen done before, that has not been done before with any other medium. I mean, it was almost like watching the final episode of a TV show that you've been watching for 10 years.
Mm, yeah.
You know, it's just like, this is the finale, and oh my God, they stuck the landing. This is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So
yeah, to have so many characters, so many storylines that they needed to wrap up. Yeah, I think they did amazing.
And they did. Yeah.
It was a whole lot to do in 3 hours.
Yeah.
I hated it.
Why did you hate it?
Well, I mean, let me clarify on that. I hated it until about 23 hours ago when I saw it for a second time. I went in with a preconceived expectation as to what the movie should be. And there were a lot of things in the movie that were very different from what I expected that it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I came out and I was talking to you guys about it and telling you that I was like, this is, it's way too slapstick.
Mm-hmm.
They messed around with a whole bunch of the characters in a way mm-hmm. that I just thought was ridiculous. And then nitpicking all kinds of different things. And you know, you could argue there are some plot holes in it when you're trying to piece together the summation of 22 movies worth of story in a nice little package. There's a lot of moving pieces that you could possibly draw. But with that being said, I don't hate it anymore. My opinion on it has changed dramatically in the second viewing of the movie.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that.
And that's right, because you love it when I agree with you.
Well, I do, but, you know, that's another topic. Brandon, what did you think?
Yeah, loved it right off the bat. I like that, especially under the Russos, the different movies kind of have a different feel, and Infinity War was such a dark, you know, unhappy movie.
Almost felt like Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, and I don't know, even though this one, you had a really long first chunk where it's still kind of dark and depressing because they're dealing with what happened in Infinity War, but still overall, I don't know, it had a, I don't know, more of an exciting, I guess, feel because they're figuring out what they need to do and they're coming up with the plan and is it going to work or is it not going to work? I mean, it was like the biggest mission they've ever been on.
Mm-hmm.
Time traveling, they've never done anything like that. But yeah, and then it hit all my fanboy buttons. I loved the little hints of the different characters' theme music at certain parts. I loved the way they wrapped up the main stories, like with Iron Man, with Cap. I loved how their stories ended. Black Widow too. I felt like her sacrifice at Vormir was, I don't know, it seemed appropriate. Like she's, with her past, which we've only gotten hints of, and I'm assuming her movie's going to give us more of that, but she's got such a dark past. She doesn't even know her real family. Like her new mission in life the last few years, like she had said in a previous movie, was that she has so much red in her ledger, she wants it wiped clean.
Yeah.
So over the last few years, all of these other heroes are now her family.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, like she's reached that point that she's been searching for years, and she felt like, I don't know, that was a really good reason to sacrifice herself for their sake.
Yeah.
And then just the way they did that scene, it was real emotional. I liked the music was similar to the same location in Infinity War. But anyways, tons of moments like that for me that I just, as a fan, it got me right where they wanted it to get me.
So you would say that the film overall and the fan service were both amazing.
Yeah, I do. Watching it the second time, you know, because the first time you don't know what's happening and you're absorbing it all. There's not a, I don't know, I wasn't critiquing it as much as a movie. Watching it for the second time, I think I see more of some of the, I don't know, the fan service or whatever is almost out of place or almost a little forced, especially in the final battle.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of takes away from it as a movie, but I kind of, again, since I'm partial, I kind of still shrug my shoulders at it and say, I love it.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah, it's real easy to go into a movie like this and to have that critic mindset and to just either nitpick everything or see the flaws. But with a movie like this, especially because you've been so ingrained with these characters for the past, you know, 11 years for some of them, it's just like, for the most part, you're just like, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get so wrapped up, it's like you're with them. You've been with them through all these journeys and all these situations, and now you're with them in the final end game, and for the most part it's just like, I don't really care that some of the time travel elements don't make sense. I don't really care that this doesn't really add up here, you know? If the general package is good, then why should my overall score, you know, be taken down because of these little tiny nitpicks?
Mm-hmm.
And we can certainly take things, you know, kind of not jump around. We can stick to one thing at a time. But like how you were bringing up with the sacrifices, that was one of my plot points? No. That was one of my... I don't even know what I'm saying. My points in my notes here was the sacrifices. I really thought that, like you were saying with Natasha, Black Widow, how that her sacrifice on Vormir felt earned, and I completely agree. Her character development since Iron Man 2 has been really interesting, and a lot of people would, you know, go and say that she's very underdeveloped or very underused, and I don't agree. I feel like she has had, you know, a lot to do in these Avenger films. I do have to say, though, I feel that it is sad that she did not get a movie before this. I feel that she's been there since the beginning, and she definitely earns it. But besides that, I felt that her sacrifice made sense because not only is she sacrificing herself for Hawkeye, who is her best friend in the entire world, and who she has been through so many different situations with and missions and stuff like that. Not only that, but this man saved her life in the beginning. He was the one that brought her into S.H.I.E.L.D. And eventually, if he had not done that, she would not have been an Avenger. And so she would not have had a family in the Avengers. But not only was she sacrificing herself for him, she was sacrificing herself for her family. And she said as much at Vormir. You know, this has been since she became an Avenger in 2012, this had been something that had really turned her life around. Because before that, she'd been a very standalone, lone wolf character. So I completely agree with you. I felt that it was earned and it was emotional. Also kind of gory when the camera panned down to show her at the bottom of the rock. There was a lot of blood, I noticed.
Yeah, they're like, she's really dead.
Yeah, I mean, it was the same exact shot that we had with Gamora in Infinity War, but with Gamora, it was green blood, so it wasn't as noticeable.
Yeah.
But, Dave, what do you have to say about Black Widow or just the sacrifices in general?
Well, I completely agree with you with regards to it being impactful, incredibly well done. Brandon, you already mentioned the music echoing exactly the same music. And let's be honest, in Infinity War, you could argue, was there any more impactful scene than when Thanos threw Gamora off that ledge?
You besides know, the with snap, I would say no.
Right, with the sweeping music and you're like, oh, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so all that's played in. The one thing that confused me about it, and this may be hearkening to the nitpicking you were already talking about, though, is my understanding, which is incredibly flawed at best, is that in order to gain the Soul Stone, you have to sacrifice that which you love the most. And it seems to me that she sacrificed herself for the thing that she loved the most, rather than sacrificing the thing that she loved the most. And that didn't make sense to me.
I thought of that too. Because for both of them, as they're fighting, going back and forth, who's going to be the one to sacrifice? They're both choosing themselves to sacrifice, not the other.
Right. Well, no, obviously that would not be impactful if they just tried to start killing each other, obviously. I love you, so I'm going to throw you off a cliff kind of thing. That's really dark. But, and my understanding of it may be wrong. But that's the way I understand it. And so that didn't make sense to me. And so just the purely analytical part of my mind distances itself from the emotion of the scene and going, well, hang on, that doesn't make sense. And in some respect, you know, not, I wouldn't say ruins the scene, but minimizes the drama of the scene through that.
I don't think it changes the argument you're making, but I think it is, I think he says that which you love. I don't think it's necessarily what you love the most. I don't remember. It seems like he said,
I think it's also different for the person who is going for the Soul Stone. Also, to a certain degree, I felt that they were both sacrificing themselves in that position for the other person. Like I said, for her family, Mm-hmm. Hawkeye was going to do it to for his family, but also to atone for his life that he had started to lead during the 5 years as Ronin. Because he realized that he had come a long way to just become a merciless killer. Right.
But with Hawkeye, it would make sense in the fact that he's killing himself because he's sacrificing the opportunity to have his family back.
Mm-hmm.
So in effect, for him, he is sacrificing his family.
You could say the same thing for her.
Yeah, because the Avengers were her family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're both kind of doing the same thing.
But that doesn't make sense then how... when she's done that, that Hawkeye's the one who gets the Soul Stone.
Because he's the one that was left.
I see what you're saying.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Thanos
sacrificed Gamora because that's what he loved, and he got the Soul Stone as his reward. But anyway,
here's the thing, though. It's an awesome movie, and you, anything negative about it, you say it doesn't matter.
Nothing matters what you say, Dave. That's negative.
Right. So, we already had this conversation.
Don't even worry.
Before we switch to another,
it actually is a good point, and I appreciate you bringing it up.
It is. It's wrong, but it's good. Before we move on to something else, I do want to add that all of them pretty much, I think we're at the top of their acting game in this one. But her specifically, Scarlett Johansson.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my word! I think this was. Probably the best of hers, acting wise.
Yeah, she was excellent. Civil War, pretty high up there.
Mm-hmm.
It was leaps and bounds better than her performance in Infinity War.
She didn't really do anything in that one. But
we
like
don't
want to
kill you.
Her being,
but we will.
Her being distraught, you know, right after the 5 years later.
Yeah.
Which I say it in my head in the SpongeBob narrator's voice.
5 years later.
when they're at Vormir, like her, she's just got peace on her face because she is completely like content with this decision to sacrifice. I
completely agree with you. I felt awesome. Her performance was one of the standouts of the film.
I mean, we could argue over who we think is our favorite, and to
our
some
MVP.
Extent, to some, yeah.
Oh,
but
boy.
They all did so well, and to some extent, I think that some storylines led to powerful performances, and I'll get to that later when I talk about the thing I hated most about the movie when I first watch it, which actually now that I watch it a second time turns out to be the thing that I like the most.
Oh, great.
About
I
mean, literally a 180 on it.
Awesome.
But, okay, so what was your favorite story arc within it? Because each character had their own conclusion, their own story arc within the meta story itself.
Now, let me clarify. Are you saying in this movie alone or in the overall
No,
MCU?
in this movie alone,
okay.
The treatment they gave to each character's story arc, which was your favorite?
That's tough. Well, I don't know if this counts as being within this movie.
No, it doesn't.
I was a huge fan of the fact that Cap went back and had his dance with Peggy. There's a lot of controversy about his ending. I loved it.
What kind of controversy?
I'm a romantic. Well, people say things like he is selfless. He would have continued to be a hero. He wouldn't have gone back selfishly, gave up the shield to have the love of his life. He goes back to the 40s and he continues to live his life from that point, knowing full well that right now his best friend is being brainwashed by Hydra, and then, you know, over the years he knows Hydra is infiltrating S.H.I.E.L.D. and supposedly, as far as we know, he just, you know, lived his retirement while all that stuff was going on. We don't know, but that's one of the main complaints people have with his ending. Personally, I think that he has done his service, and actually, watching it the second time, I think when they are in 1970, when he sees Peggy in the office, I felt like, I didn't even think about it the first time I watched, but the second viewing, I was like, that scene was in there for a reason. I think that was I think that cemented his decision to go back and be with her. When he saw her, you know, right in front of him.
Mm-hmm. You think that was the moment that he decided?
You know, he's been carrying around the little picture and his memory. But right. I felt like when he saw her, I think that led to him feeling like, oh man, I got to go back.
Especially when you consider she hadn't aged at all in the 25 years.
What's up with that?
From that, I mean
they could have thrown in some
looking,
gray.
That's a good looking woman for like in her mid 50s.
Yeah,
that's a complaint I have.
I don't have that complaint at all. Yeah. I only just thought about it.
With all the de-aging that they did in this movie, they couldn't have given her some more wrinkles.
Right.
Marvel.
Yeah, chintzing out. What about you, Caleb? What was your favorite story arc?
Well, the person I felt that had the most interesting to do in this movie, besides the usual players, I thought was Nebula.
Mm.
I thought that they gave her quite an interesting arc in this film. She was used in Infinity War and the Guardians movies, but she was very much a supporting character.
Right.
They gave her a lot to do in this film.
Yeah, and I thought they did really, really well. I agree with you.
Oh, yeah.
Really well.
And they used her they used her really well for her dry wit. For the comedy beats. But I liked how her story kind of interwove with Thanos' story as the movie went on. Even though some of that was a little confusing at first, my first watch, with her and her past self kind of sort of sharing the same Wi-Fi, if you will.
Right, yeah. In the same year.
Yeah.
I guess that's why.
That was a little confusing, but I thought she did a real good job. I also thought that Karen Gillan had a great performance. She was one of my other big standouts in the film besides Romanoff and Tony Stark.
I've always felt bad for her as an actress because she's always, her part is so, I'm an angry side villain.
Yeah.
I don't know. She never really has had a whole lot to do.
Yeah, I felt that besides this movie, they gave her the most to do in Guardians Volume 2, which a lot of people don't really care for. I feel it's a great character piece all of them.
Yeah.
It's a hilarious movie, but also the character beats between all of them is just great.
Mm-hmm. And between with her and Gamora...
Especially
that led to what happens in Endgame.
Right.
Exactly. I really like that.
I love that you see at the very beginning of the movie, she's taking baby steps in acting like a human being. You're playing the little table football flicky game thing. Yeah. I'm from England. Yeah. I don't know what it's called. Flippy football thing.
Paper
football.
Yeah.
And her and Rocket holding hands.
That was one of my top moments.
My favorite part is when faced with the decision between herself and her sister, she does not hesitate to destroy her former self.
Yeah.
To protect. You see in this movie the huge cavern between her old self and her new self.
And in only a few years.
Right.
Like three or four. Well,
you know, she's not an emotive character. She's not an emotive character. Mm-hmm. She's German, if you will. She's not an emotive character, but there is such change in who she is in that. And it's really funny, especially when you consider that Gamora is the old Gamora, and she doesn't understand what's going on at all. And yet she sees that her sister, her hated sister, kills herself in a heartbeat to protect her.
I am really curious to see what they do with that, with Gamora in the third Guardians. I hope they don't kind of drop that.
Guardians 3, the search for Gamora?
I don't think so, yeah. I'm pretty sure it'll be, something like that.
Why is Gamora? Right.
I
have something to say about Nebula.
Okay, go ahead.
So, this is really cool to me. So, if you read the comics of Infinity Gauntlet, which I think is mostly what Infinity War came from, that's the story where Thanos has the gauntlet and he's killing everybody and he's you know, he's acting like a god.
Yeah.
In the comics, Nebula, similar to how he was kind of, he had her, you know, floating and all mm-hmm. strung out in pieces, kind of torturing her.
Yeah.
In the comics, she's on the ground. He's on, like, this floating platform out in space
mm-hmm.
where he's doing his gauntlet stuff. She's laying on the ground, like, completely deformed, and she can't speak or do anything. He's got her in this, like, he's torturing her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a part in the story where she is able to get the gauntlet from him
mm-hmm.
because he was distracted or something. I don't remember for sure. But she gets the gauntlet, and she does not have it long because she's not powerful. She's not strong enough to mm-hmm. handle it, and she completely, like, fails with the gauntlet, and so he gets it back. But it was an interesting in the comic, it's interesting for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of the last characters you would expect to get a hold of it. So I'm talking about that with the family the day we saw Endgame, right before we saw the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about this, and I was like, oh yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do with Nebula, but she's never really done much, so they probably won't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
To my surprise, she's one of the main characters in the movie.
Yeah.
But that part where she's facing off with old Nebula, one of my boys, and I completely agree with him, he said that this is one thing they should have done different. When the two of them are facing off,
mm-hmm.
She shoots old Nebula,
mm-hmm.
right? The gauntlet falls on the ground. New Nebula picks it up. And for a moment, she looks at it, and she's tempted. She could put on this gauntlet and be super powerful, you know, yada yada.
Mm-hmm.
But then, because of her growth, she stops herself, she snaps out of it, and she gives it to Hawkeye. And so I'm a little bummed they didn't have any reference to that in the comics. But I think that would have been neat, just to, you know, for fans like me, that would have... Yeah. Seen it as like a little Easter egg or whatever.
And leading up to the movie, people actually thought that she would get the gauntlet because of the Infinity Gauntlet storyline.
I didn't see it happening just because of her lack of growth. They got a lot closer than I thought they would.
See, I think mm-hmm. it would have made more sense if during that scene it was old Nebula that picks it up.
But it wouldn't have been as impactful. To see mm-hmm. the new good Nebula struggle with it.
But I think that would have... Because new Nebula has made such strife. And we know her character is very black and white.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She's made the decision to be a good guy, for mm-hmm. want of a better expression. I don't see her having moral troubles like that. Hence why she's able to shoot her former self in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Because she's protecting herself. Now, it would have been interesting to see old Nebula getting it, because, you know, old Nebula is going to go get it for Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
But then she stops and goes, And then in runs new Nebula and stuff like that, who takes no qualms about shooting her dead to protect Gamora, picks up the Infinity Gauntlet, and just gives it to Hawkeye.
I think that would have been interesting.
That would have been really nice, because that would have shown, again, the huge chasm between the two
characters. And honestly, I'm kind of surprised that through that whole scene, you don't see anybody look tempted to put it on.
Mm.
I don't know. It felt like I'm surprised they didn't have anything.
Well, it's not an evil entity like the One Ring. I mean, it's... These people have seen the kind of power this thing can do. Yeah. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to wield it.
Maybe it would have been distracting, too, from
what
was going on.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Too many things going on.
Right. But to just kind of wrap up my thoughts with Nebula, I really liked just how they used her throughout the movie. And what I was going to say earlier is just how that I feel like there was a lot of character development between Guardians Volumes 2, Infinity War, and Endgame with her. Because Guardians Volume 2, a lot of people don't know this, actually, timeline-wise, is taking place a couple of months after the first Guardians. So it's actually taking place, you know, in 2014. So they had about 4 years in between Guardians Volumes 2, timeline-wise, and Infinity War. And when Nebula in Infinity War, is released from the hold that Thanos had on her, she immediately gets in touch with Manus and Rocket. So you have to assume in that time frame that they've had adventures or, you know, because she seems very... I mean, I don't feel like if there was no character development, she would have cradled Rocket's hand in that moment.
Yeah.
Because they had not... If not for the character development I'm alluding to, they would not have seen each other in about 4 or 5 years.
Right.
So... but anyways, I like I said, I really enjoyed Nebula. I feel she was one of the MVPs of this movie, and I was really glad to see what they did with her character. So
that's real good.
Indeed. Dave.
all right, so when I watched the movie first time.
Sorry? I said, oh boy.
Oh boy, all right. Strap yourselves in, kids. Strap yourselves in. No. When I watched the movie the first time, I hated it. In fact, Caleb, you and I were sitting together in the movie theater, and you leaned across and you asked me, you know, what do you think so far?
Yeah, about 30, 40 minutes
in. Yeah, and I said I hated it.
Yeah.
It was too much slapstick comedy and mm-hmm. and other things, in my opinion, at that time. But the thing that really threw me for a loop
mm-hmm.
was the Big Lebowski.
And you're referring to Thor. Yes.
Yeah, fat Big Lebowski Thor.
The dude.
And, you know...
And the then hammer really made put the room together.
But I really struggled with that. Like I said at the beginning, you know, I had a preconceived idea of the way the movie should go.
Mm-hmm.
And Thor not being the god of thunder was definitely not the way mm-hmm. I had imagined it going. And I just thought they were just being stupid with it. And then I just read a simple article online that suggested, or it didn't suggest, it was with the Russos, that they were exploring PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
with him. And I didn't give it credence at one point. I was like, well, you know, he's a god. You know what I mean? You know, what's he going to suffer for? But the more I thought about it, the more it made sense. And so when I went to watch the movie last night, and I went, instead of having this preconceived notion, having seen the movie and knowing what it's about now,
mm-hmm.
I went with a much more analytical mind to look at the characters, the development, and the story they're actually trying to tell, rather than the story I wanted them to tell originally.
Yeah.
And Thor's story of fallen redemption, as shown in this one movie, is phenomenal. You know, you've got... At the end of Infinity War, you know, before Captain Marvel arrives on the scene, the most powerful of the Avengers, okay? I mean, he's now fully realized Thor, mm-hmm. carrying the ultimate, you know, bad guy killing war axe, full powers in him, you know, bring me Thanos, you know, that yeah. awesome scene where yeah. he just comes and just decimates Wakanda.
Still one of the best scenes in the
just,
MCU.
Yeah, just mm-hmm. tears the place apart.
Goosebumps.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a Norse god, you know, mm-hmm. he's the leader of Asgard. He should be unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
And he fails.
Yeah.
You know, and he doesn't fail to, and I say in inverted commas, kill Thanos, because mm-hmm. he smacks him with the axe and, you know, right in the chest.
Embeds it.
But
yeah.
he does what young baby Thor would have done. Act impetuously. Didn't mm-hmm. think about going for the arm or the head, as Thanos points out to him.
Yep.
And so the snap occurs. And then we start Endgame with Thor just brooding. You know, they've spent 30 days trying to figure this out, trying to find yeah. Thanos, and he's just brooding in a corner. And yeah. when they finally find him, he's impotent, because mm-hmm. Thanos has already used the Infinity Stones to destroy the Infinity Stones.
Yep.
And so there is no restitution. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no redemption for Thor, and he just angrily chops off Thanos' head
yeah.
and then goes into a pit. So you've got the most powerful, with the most responsibility, the most capability and ability, a living god, and he can't protect his people. He's lost all his friends. He's lost all his family. He's failed in every way possible. So it's a wonderful story of someone who cannot fail, should not fail. There's inconceivable that he could possibly fail. And yet he falls the furthest because everything rested on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And so he becomes Fat Thor. He becomes PTSD. And then the more I looked at it and analyzed that, you know, he's avoiding, he gets angry, he's emotional, he's a drunkard, he, you know, hides as best he can, he's hiding his emotions. You know, he's completely broken, a completely broken guy. And I love that they took this broken thing, no longer Thor, and he gets his mother. And his mother says, I love you no matter what. He gets acceptance from the person who he loves the most.
Right.
And then he sticks out his hand and he gets his hammer back. And that is symbolic of his father saying, you are still worthy to be my son, my heir. So he's got his unconditional love from his mother.
Yep.
He's got the redemption of his position as from his father. And then when Captain America gets the hammer, gets Mjolnir in the final battle, and it's so cool because Thor's response to that is not like it would have been in Age of Ultron, horror. He just says, I knew it.
Yeah.
And and he finally gets that final catharsis, the release of responsibility. So he's no longer got the weight on his shoulders, that untenable weight of being a god king.
Yeah.
And he is accepted for being fallible. Yeah. And from that point, that whole thing that his mother says about, you know, be the man you are, not who you should be, which sounded stupid to me the first time, it comes into perfect clarity. And he can now accept that I can make mistakes and it doesn't mean that I'm a worthless wretch.
Yeah.
And I think there's a great moral and, you know, character building tale for the average human being to take away within the depths of this superhero movie. So when I I went from the thing that I hated most about the movie, that's the thing that I love the most about the movie is, you know, Thor's redemptive growth. You know, throughout these movies you've seen Thor go from, you know, hey, I'm a god, I was born with amazing powers, into being one worthy of wielding these powers, only to find that that doesn't prevent him from making mistakes like everybody else. And he couldn't handle that, and then he's redeemed by the people who love him the most.
For sure.
So that's my favorite character arc in the movie.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I agree. I mean, Thor has been through the ringer, I think, more so than any other character in the MCU. He's lost his mother, his father, his brother, his sister he had to kill. You know, he lost his best friend in Heimdall. He lost,
Asgard. You know,
Asgard. There was
the planet.
First off, Hela killed a whole bunch of Asgardians. Then the ones that he had just been entrusted to protect as the new king get decimated by Thanos. Half of them die. Then the snap happens, so another half of them die. And then the ones that he has left, he has to protect. And he couldn't even protect those people by killing Thanos, doing the one thing that he thought he could do and said that he would do. That was his whole arc throughout Infinity War, is I'm going to make this hammer.
Right.
And I'm going to kill you because you killed my brother. You know, and
it's his one last thing he has left, his vengeance, and he fails at it.
Which is so great, because that's what he says to Rocket in the spaceship in Infinity War. Rocket says, well, what if this doesn't work? And he said, well, what else do I have to lose?
Right. Yeah. But he doesn't fully understand the implications of that. And I do like, as much as, again, I hated the fishing village by the sea, New Asgard, in the first time I watched it, he's still at the beginning of the movie having to carry this mantle of being the God King. So he's created what is the most laughable of king. I mean, it's a laughable kingdom. It's a it's a fishing village by the docks.
Yeah.
And he just drinks beer and plays, you know, Fortnite.
Plays video games with his friend Korg.
There you go.
Korg and Meek.
And so, but he's still got the weight on his shoulders of the responsibility, even though he's hiding from it. Mm-hmm. And at the end, you know, he turns to Valkyrie and he says, you know, they don't need me. They have royalty already here.
Yeah.
I'm essentially, I'm free to be the failure that I am and be confident knowing that that's okay. Because let's be honest, he's still Thorn. He could still kick you back.
Do you know, do you know the significance of that location, the village?
I do not.
The village is in the area that you see at the beginning of the first Thor movie when his father is fighting
the Frost Giants?
Yeah.
Okay,
that
cool.
took place there. And also, it is the village in the first Captain America where the cube is hidden inside the
Germany?
Wall.
No. They, in the first Avenger, Red Skull attacks a village in Norway.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I just assume it was Germany.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's Norway.
Yep.
See, I assume the fishing village was Cornwall in England because it looks just like Cornwall.
Yeah.
I thought it was
says,
like...
Whatever the name is on the
sign.
I thought
it was like New England or something.
Hmm. Interesting.
That's what it looked like to me.
Can we talk about why are there still living Asgardians? Because at the beginning of Infinity War, it sure seemed like everybody was dead.
He only killed half of them.
Right.
They were on multiple ships.
And Thor says as much in Infinity War. It's like, it's not a throwaway scene, but it's kind of like a scene where he's just like, there are half of my people.
Oh.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know how I've missed that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I need to see it for an eighth time.
But then again, it's like there's half of them from Thanos attacking the ship, and then half of that gets
snapped. Oh, yeah, Asgard. And then obviously that's after Hela's already
Exactly, just like I said,
well.
Yeah.
Hence why it's a small fishing village.
Yeah, it's like, it looks like 10 people in the shot, you know? So,
Which makes it, again, even more pathetic that he's created a kingdom.
A kingdom.
Kind of thing, in inverted commas.
But no, Dave, that was perfectly worded. That was so great. I loved Thor in this movie. I did feel like he had such a great character arc, and I would agree with you. It's one of the best
ones. Right. And then during the final scene, when, you know, Captain America is using Mjolnir, you know, and they kind of mix up as they got it, and then Captain America's got, you know, Stormbreaker, and Thor's got him. You go right back to how he would have been right in the very first movie. He's like, no, you take the small one.
You
know what I mean?
One.
He's just like, boom, got my character back. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he's now got life in him again.
Right.
Just with a big belly and a braided beard.
God bless
Which
you.
Which was awesome.
Hemsworth.
It looked like a Viking. That's what I was like.
Yeah.
Was like
a big fat Viking.
Yeah. It was great.
I mean, if I could use lightning to braid my hair, I probably would.
I would have used it to give me a six-pack again first, but, you know, that's because I'm vain. Awkward silence.
All right. Well, hey, tell you what. For the sake of time, let's go ahead and pause the conversation. We'll make this a two-parter. We'll come back and do a second episode where we will go through the movie beginning to end and kind of analyze and talk about our favorite parts and least favorite parts. So thank you for putting up with us and making it through an entire episode. We have been The Film Twits. We are on Facebook and Twitter, so keep an eye out for the next episode. Talk to you later.